Well, I'm thankful to see you tonight. I appreciate, again, your presence and the opportunity that's been given to us to come together, the songs we've been able to sing and to pray together. And I trust that we'll spend the rest of this assembly wisely as we think together about what I believe to be a very fundamental and important subject, one that's certainly close to my heart. I want to start out with an illustration that somebody shared with me. It begins this way. One afternoon, a man came home from work to find total mayhem in his house. His three children were outside, still in their pajamas, playing in the mud with empty food boxes and wrappers strewn all about the front yard. The door of his wife's car was open, as was the front door to the house. Proceeding into the entry, he found an even bigger mess. A lamp had been knocked over. The throw rug was wadded against one wall. In the front room, the TV was blaring loudly a cartoon channel, and the family room was strewn with toys and various items of clothing. In the kitchen, dishes filled the sink. Breakfast food spilled on the counter. Dog food spilled on the floor. A broken glass lay under the table. A small pile of sand was spread by the back door. He quickly headed up the stairs, stepping over toys and more piles of clothes, looking for his wife. He was worried she might be ill or that something serious might have happened. He found her lounging in the bedroom, still curled in the bed in her pajamas, reading a novel. And she looked at him and smiled and asked how his day went. And he looked at her bewildered and asked, "What happened here today?" And again she smiled and answered, "You know how every day you come home from work and ask me what in the world I did today?" He said, "Yes." She said, "Well, today, I didn't do it." I want to say something tonight that I intend to be an encouragement to a group that I believe is worthy and I believe deserves truly encouragement. I want to say something tonight to encourage the young women here and the young men here that are so well represented and I think seem to be of such high quality. I want to encourage you to think about the value and the importance of the work of making a home. You know, it's a strange thing to me how things get twisted. When you talk about the value of homemakers, there are some who have a knee-jerk reaction and say, "Oh, you're just against women. You're trying to keep women there." Which always I find to be bizarre, and especially in my case, because I figure that fellow's never met me. Because I am surrounded by women. You realize that in my household, of course, my wife and I, and we have three daughters. At one time, we're all at home there. And my mother, who has lived with us for several years, and my sister lived with us for a while after she had an accident. And we've been talking casually about, we got a couple of dogs and cats, they're all female. I had a turtle one time, I don't know what it was, but we counted it male just so I wouldn't feel lonesome. But, you know, when people talk about me being against women, you don't understand me. I'm surrounded by women. I used to joke, if it's not too out of place, I live in the estrogen ocean. That's my address. So, no, I'm not against women. I'm all for them. And I want to say something to encourage you. I want to say something to praise
the godly mothers and grandmothers who've been showing the way all these years. And I want to say something to the young women, including my daughters and your sons, that I hope will help to remind them and help to shape their thinking about this very important work. I believe it's necessary because I'm going to tell you, the world is pumping a lot of propaganda and has been for a long time. I think if sociologists would know more than I would, it may have been the Second World War. Something really flipped the switch. And in my lifetime, the numbers have changed dramatically. The whole structure of the family, the idea of the breadwinner and then mom watching over the home, you know, that was the dominant model for years and years and years, and now, you know, that's in the minority. There's no doubt about that. In our society, things have changed radically. The question that we ask of people who love the Bible is that getting us closer to God's model or further from it? And I believe there's an answer to that question. But I look in the Scriptures and I think about passages like, for example, 1 Timothy chapter 2. He talks in this passage about the responsibility of men to lift up holy hands without wrath and doubting. And then in verse 9, he addresses the women. In like manner also, that women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with the braided hair, gold, pearls, costly array, but which becometh women professing godliness with good works. Let a woman learn in silence with all subjection. But I suffer not a woman to teach nor to usurp authority over the man, but to be in silence. For Adam was first born, then Eve. Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived was in the transgression. Notwithstanding, she shall be saved in childbearing if they continue in faith and charity and holiness with sobriety. And you read that expression, she shall be saved in childbearing. What did he mean by that? Well, I don't believe that he means that obviously having a child is somehow a substitute for being baptized into Christ. That's not the point, is it? There are some great women that will never have a child, they'll be married, it'll please God. He's not suggesting to us here, I don't believe that this is some connection with Christ. Some make that connection. I don't see that in the context. Christ being born of woman, in other words. I think what he's talking about here, where is the glory for the woman? Where will her glory be found? There are some who think, and still do, that her glory is to be found in costly array, in wearing clothing that draws everybody's attention, either because it's lewd or is it so outrageously expensive. The best dress list in every generation always runs against the Scripture. That's not where glory is to be. Others think, and have thought through the years, and still do, that her glory is only to be found if she can learn how to imitate men. There's been the great irony to me about feminism is that they want to take your daughter and make a man out of her. Because being a woman, you see, is no good. Unless she apes a man and takes his place and rules over him, then she's not worth anything. That's something just pretty outrageous. And of course, the Lord would say, her glory is not there either. Let me tell you, he says, where her glory is to be found. Is to be found in that unique gift that God gives to her. And that is that gift of childbearing and motherhood. That's where the glory is. You can't beat that. You can't top that. And I wish we still lived in a world that believed that. You know, he goes on in Timothy, the fifth chapter, to hold up as an example certain women, widows in particular in the context here, who are taken into the number, whatever might be involved with that. But setting that aside, what he describes here really would be, I think, something that any would be glad to have said of them. If she is well reported on, verse 10, for good works. For example, if she has brought up children, lodged strangers, washed the saints' feet, relieved the afflicted, if she has diligently followed every good work. Here is a woman who is known for her good works, famous for them. She is devoted to them. And she has received the credit due to her good works, blessing the many. In 1 Timothy 5:14, he goes on to say, I will therefore that the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully. And again we find the domestic glorified. What he wills for her is that she might marry and become literally a house mistress, to be the female form of the word master, the master, the head of the house, to rule a house, to rule and manage family affairs. This is a management position he describes. And he recommends it as being worthy of your life, of your time, and of your talents. In Titus chapter 2, as we continue reading in Paul's letters, he addresses a similar thought with Titus. He describes the qualities of the aged men, and then he comes to the aged women likewise, that they be in behavior as becomes holiness, not false accusers or given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. This idea, this phrase, keeper at home, taking care of the household affairs, domestic, a homemaker, as some have suggested the word might be translated. And that's the idea. Is it a great mystery? What does it mean to be a keeper at home? Here's a fella. Where do you work? I work at the plant. Where do you work? I work over here in this office. Where do you work? I work at home. That's my place of work. And the Bible would describe that work as being worthy of a woman's time and her efforts and her talents. She's not wasting her time in doing that work. It is a work worthy. It's a full-time job. Again, the world has discounted that work. It has dismissed that work. But we know better. When somebody asks, you know, a woman who is devoted to that, how do you do all that? Well, she does have an answer to that. There's an old saying, a woman's work is never done. Is that not true? You don't believe it, try something. You know, there's housework to be done. If you've got a household and more people in it, and more work to be done, it's just a constant work. There's just, in my house, we eat every day. Every day we eat. And, you know, meals don't drop out of no manner coming down in the backyard. Somebody's got to handle it. We wear clothes every day. Clothes have to be purchased, or they have to be made, or they have to be mended, they have to be loved. Every day. Every day, there's just the clutter that comes. Every day, there's just the work that just goes on from day to day to day. Well, that's menial work. But I don't believe that people who are serving and helping those they love think of it that way. And I don't believe any of us ought to think of it that way. But I'd say there's a lot more that goes on in her work than just those kinds of things, although I would say it certainly is worthy in and of itself. In so many cases, she's rearing children. That's a lot of work. That's not news, is it? I was reminiscing about this recently. You know, our daughters are grown, but when our oldest that was here yesterday, Laurie, was just a little thing, here came Pamela. And there were complications. And so Donna was bedfast for months. And Wes got an education. Let me tell you now, he sure did. He found out where the washing machine was. He found out about
you know, a lot of it. And I had help from other folks and good to me, but there's just some things you need to take care of. And so we had to do that. I made rookie mistakes. One rookie mistake that I made was I got one of the first times we were working on our routine, and they headed out to church that night. So I got Laurie, little Laurie, got her bathed and got her dressed, and I said, we got just enough time to get the carrots in. Carrots, that's where it started. Just enough time to get the carrots done, and then we'll top off the tank and head to, well, you know that's what's going to happen there. So I had her sitting on the couch, you know, and I crossed my leg this way, and I had her sit in there. I thought, well, she wouldn't squirm too much. And you get the jar open, had a little towel out. I go, let that dribble off on me. You know, and just about 4 or 5 bites into this thing, Lauren had a habit as a baby, she could sneeze without warning. And when she did, let me tell you, there were carrots all over me, her, the wall, the couch, everywhere. Big mistake. You have to learn these things. You always feed, then bathe, then clothe. That's the way that works. We'll get that out of order. But, you know, you see a mama, and especially when those children are little, and you just marvel at how she keeps all that straight. How much is that worth an hour, by the way? Is that worth $5.50 an hour? It might be worth $5.75 an hour. What do you think? But, you know, it's not just, you know, kids are not just little machines that you just feed them here and haul them there and clothe them. They are their little souls. And so mama doesn't just feed them and bathe them. She sings to them and she'll tell them Bible stories and she'll teach them right from wrong and she'll teach them how to mind. They look up to her and they learn from her. There are preachers that I've heard who have said, it doesn't make any, you know, there's not a big difference whether she's home or she's not home. There's no difference. Let me tell you, little Johnny falls down on the sidewalk, skins his knee, and ain't got a mama at home. You ask him if there's a difference. I believe he knows there's a difference. How much is that worth now? That might be worth $6 now, as I think about it. You know, there's other work that she does, though. Some of it's husband tending. It's not just tending the children. You know, a good wife, there's that passage in 1 Peter 3. Wives are commanded to be in subjection to their own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they may also without the word be won by the conversation of the wives, while they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear. That is a great example of the kind of influence she has. Let me tell you, he may never admit it to you, but the truth of the matter is, what you think about him means more than anything else to him. It'll have that kind of influence on you. I hate to even start this now, but I'll say it quickly. You guys, probably some of you don't know Jim and Dolores Atkins. Well, maybe nobody here does. Brother Atkins is dying as we're talking. He's a godly folks, and we worked with him for years in West Virginia, and we got word today he's been sick, been in the hospital, and it's not good. But I have hope for him. But I know exactly why Jim Atkins is a Christian today. It's because of Dolores Atkins. She grew up in a denominational circumstance there. Mother very prejudiced against the church, but she listened and she obeyed the gospel. She was already married, they had 3 little girls, but she obeyed the gospel. And her mother criticized her, and her husband didn't go. But let me tell you what Miss Atkins did. She went. She didn't own a car, couldn't drive. She'd get somebody to come pick her up. Didn't miss a service. If it was raining, if it was hot, whatever it was, there's snow. And to cut to the chase, those little girls who came and heard, they obeyed the gospel. 1, 2, 3. And the day that the youngest came forward, Jim Atkins came right up the aisle behind him. And he obeyed the gospel. And then those girls grew up, and they married young men. And one of them is an elder out in Houston. One of them is an elder of the church in Western Virginia. And one of them is preaching up in Alabama. And if somebody asked me, I spent 10 years with the church there, Darty Street. If you asked me who it is that had more to do with the church there being there, staying there, and working there, I'd say it's her. If you met her, maybe you wouldn't see a halo over her head. You might think of her as being rather an ordinary person, just a nice person, but I believe she's great in the kingdom. And it's an example to me of the godly influence of a woman and the good that she did through the years. Now, I'm not here to tell you that there's some men that I don't care how good their wife is, they're not going to obey. All right? We understand that. But I'm saying that if good can be done, well, she'll do it. And her, what's that word for now? When the husband comes in, he's just as flat as he can be, and he's just down and out, she'll pump some air into him, and when he comes in and he's a little too full of himself, she can take a needle and let some out of him too. She has that ability, but all of it in the right way and with a godly spirit. That might be worth $6.25 an hour. What do you think? $6.30. You know, the good works that she does, brother, we just talked about the work she does with her husband, with her family. But the work that she does for other people. The young people that collected her house after school because she's the one that's home, you know, and she'll feed them a sandwich and she'll lead a prayer to those little kids, and that might be the only prayer they'll folks hear all week. And she'll go and visit the older people. And you know, it's not that other folks wouldn't be glad to do some of that, but I mean, you know, how many full-time jobs can you have? That's the question, you know. It's not a question of good-hearted, not good-hearted. It's a question of, you know, how can we stretch 24 hours anymore? And the kingdom work that she does, as if all that's not kingdom work. But, I mean, you think about all the good that she'll do. You know, you find that when the women of the church are able to get together and work together, it is a great blessing to the work as a whole, isn't it? And when they have that time and take that time, what a blessing. I have great respect. I don't know what's going on as far as this congregation, your circumstances here, but it's like most places. These classes for the young children, I think, are very important. And most of that seems to fall on our women. And the woman who, among other busy things that she's doing, takes the time to work and prepare. And it takes a lot of preparation in my mind to do that job and do it as well as some women I know. There's just a lot of work for the kingdom that she does. And I'm thankful for it. And we ought not to diminish that or think of that as being somehow unimportant. What does it take to get all this done? Again, I'm going to contend in the first place that at least to some extent it takes being home. What does it take to be a homemaker? Well, I think being home is important. I'm not suggesting that she has to have a chain on her leg to keep her, you know, tied to the porch, that she can't ever leave the premises. No, that's not the point at all. The thing we've talked about already would suggest better than that. I've got an article somewhere, I don't think I brought it tonight, but where a brother was taking issue with, I guess, guys like me, and what I would be saying in this, and he would say, you know, the problem with fellows like you is when you read the verse, you think it says, instead of keepers at home, keep her at home. Yeah, that's a pretty funny line. But I'm not smart enough to understand how she's going to be. Haven't you ever read Proverbs 31? Didn't that woman go out and buy a field? Yeah, I got that. I've never thought of her as, you know, spending 70 hours a week in a field set on. But, you know, that's the idea. Is that it's going to be difficult for her to do the work she does and not be centered on the home. I think about a passage in the Old Testament that is not about homemakers, but there's a principle in Nehemiah chapter 13 that I think is
worthy of consideration. You remember the context here.
Where the, you know, when Israel came back, they had they developed this
softness toward this enemy of God, this man Tobiah. They had actually let him take up residence in the store chamber of the temple, and of course Nehemiah was furious about that. It says in verse 8 of Nehemiah 13, "It grieved me sore, and I cast forth all the household stuff of Tobiah out of the chamber, and I commanded that, and they, that they cleanse the chambers. I brought again the vessels of the house of God and the meat offering and the frankincense." And then he had a very good question. That is, why is this storehouse empty to start with? "I perceive that the portions," verse 10, "of the Levites had not been given them, for the Levites and the singers that did the work were fled every one to his field. And I contended with the rulers, and I said, why is the house of God forsaken? And I gathered them together and set them in their place." And the point is that the problem was that these Levites, God's plan was they might be supported to do the work of the temple, but they were not being supported, and so they were out doing work in the field. What's wrong with field work? Not a thing. It's just not their work. And while they're doing this work, the work of God is not being done. There's the issue. There's the rub. You know, something else certainly that's necessary is a strong work ethic to do this work. It used to be one of those questions, and I'm sure this is true about some of the women here, especially the young mothers. Somebody come up to you and they'll ask you a question like, "Do you work?" Yeah, she loved that. "Do you work?" Here's this woman, and she's got three little kids, you know, hanging all over. "Do you work?" "No, I sit around blowing bubbles all day long. I don't work." "Work? What is work?" Well, you know, what you're doing, they don't consider work. It's a demeaning thing, really, whether they mean it or not. That's the way it comes across. But you know, the truth is, there may be some who don't work. There may be some who just spend their time misusing the television and misusing the telephone, and they don't work. There are actually some who act bored with it. And I would think there would not be anybody here who would say something like this. But if you think it, don't tell me, because I think that's obvious if you say something like this. They say, "I tried it. I was just bored." You know, that's about like a gospel preacher who is fully supported to do the work of preaching. And he says, "You know, I'm just bored." "Really? You're bored? You just taught everybody in Shelby County, in the big county today? You read everything? You just never get through with your work. You never read all you need to read. You never see all the folks you need to see. You never get done. You run out of time or you run out of wisdom, but there's never a time you say, well, there's nothing to do. There's a world to do with your family and with the church and with everybody you can reach." So we think of it, but what we need is just a work ethic. We need, because we have to have that self-starting attitude that takes satisfaction in doing a work that we know to be worthwhile. It takes skill. I don't have to say a lot about this, but it just does. It takes skill. When I was working secular work, I worked in an office, and there was a woman that worked there in the office with me. And she had a daughter. She was a married woman, but she was not domestic. She was not at all domestic. And I thought through the years. She came in one day, and she had a pair of breeches. And she wanted to wear them, apparently, pretty quickly, and they were too long. So she said, "Well, I need to hem them, but I don't know how to hem." So she grabbed a stapler, and she went around the bottom of those things, you know. And I thought, I don't know anything about this, but that doesn't look right to me. I don't think that's right. You know, I wouldn't know much better. But you know, it's amazing how women know how to do things. They weren't born knowing that, but they've learned the skills. That's just a little example. Just the skills of how to make things good. It's skilled labor. And it gets dismissed and it gets overlooked. But I'll tell you, this good woman, she knows how to make things work.
She knows how to handle finances. We're not going to put all that on her. But she knows how to take what she has and to make the most of it. My grandmother had an expression that probably she didn't coin, but you may have heard. She said, there are some women that can take more out the back door with a teaspoon than a man can bring in the front door with a shovel. Something along that line. You don't get the point, don't you? Not this woman. This woman knows how to take a little and do the most with it. Or take a lot and do the best with it. She has character. When you read in 1 Timothy 3, we don't read simply about the elders and deacons, do we? But about the women that go with them and the grace and quality that they have. They're not great. They are not slanderers. They are rather grave and sober and faithful. Not humorless, but they can be serious. They have a view on life. They have a character. They hold themselves with dignity. They have good judgment. They have discretion. And all of those things certainly show in the way they carry themselves and in the work that they do. They have Bible knowledge. It is a great mistake when a person carelessly assumes that because, you know, women, they're not going to be the elders, they're not going to be the preacher, so they don't have to be as good a Bible student. You could not be more wrong, could you? Where do you think the preachers and the elders come from? They come from mama's knee. And if the women in the church are not good Bible students, the congregation's in trouble. Timothy had the faith that was found first in his grandmother and his mother. They have, for lack of a better term, and this is not the best way to say it, I guess, maybe you can help me with this phrase, but they have what I call a balance about them. And I mean by that they're able to handle all the roles that are put on them. You know, it's amazing, or it's impressive at least, how a woman can be both a devoted wife and a devoted mother. That's a challenging role sometimes. But she finds that balance. She is able to be both a leader in the home. She is able to guide the house. And also at the same time, not overrun the authority of her husband. She is able to be devoted to her family, but she never loses her allegiance to God. How does she do all that? Well, there's a wisdom involved in that. And she's got it. You know, maybe this word has to be put here somewhere. What she does because she loves. Those of us who are blessed to have good wives, or we had good mothers, sometimes maybe people wait too long before they realize how much was done for them. And maybe they wait too long before they say thank you for that. But what we learn is they didn't do it to hear thank you. They deserve to hear. They do what they do because they love. I was sort of joking earlier about, you know, how much is it worth? Is it worth $5, $6 an hour? You couldn't pay somebody $6 an hour to do what she does 24 hours a day. I mean, you can have somebody come in and do things, but they go home. But she is devoted in her service because she loves. And aren't we thankful for that? Because the world is not. I think that's part of the reason why we see some of the whirlwind that we're reaping in our society. I don't think that the rise in adultery and the rise in divorce rate is unrelated to this point. I think because you have married men who are working with married women, you know, and spending a lot more time with them than they are with their wives, is a problem. It is a temptation. It is a gateway to trouble. I think that sometimes the lack of discipline in children can be related to that. We've all seen the fit pitched in the grocery store at 6 o'clock in the evening. And just uncontrolled behavior. And you wonder, why doesn't that woman open her eyes and deal with this problem? And it sometimes, many times maybe, is because she has been away from them for hours and hours and hours a day, and she's with them for this amount of time that she doesn't want to spend that thing. Not a good choice, but I think that's a problem. And it's certainly a contributing factor to some other problems that come along. I think you have untaught and mistaught children. When you make the decision that we're going to take the child and put them in somebody else's care, let me tell you, children learn from those they are around. And if they are around somebody else for most of the day, somebody else is doing most of the shaping. That's just a fact we need to wake up to. And what we're missing in the process is just heartbreak. And the consequences of that likewise are frightening. I think it tends to cause troubles in terms of the relationship between the husband and the wife at times. And it's harder for the wife maybe to think about her places in subjection when maybe they have more of a co-equal relationship in that regard. It's also, I think, a consequence at times that the woman in the business world having to deal with some of the things she deals with becomes hardened in a way that's even more difficult for her and really unfair to her. I think kids become at times robbed of a sense of security that they ought to have. There'll be plenty of time they'll have to be away from mama and daddy, but to be away from both of them at a young age, it seems to me, bears consequences. And parents are robbed. They're robbed of memories. I sometimes read an example. I don't think I'll do that at this particular time. But anyway, an example, but it's one that's repeated often, of a woman who described the guilt and the heartache that she felt crying all the way to work, dropping off the little one, missing the first steps, the first this, the first that, and trying in her own mind to figure out, okay, now, why are we doing this? What's the gain for the loss here? It's a valid question. I think both ways you have a loss in that relationship. But if all that's so, if all that's so important, why is it that so many have rejected this way? If it's so great, why are most people turning in the other direction? It's a fair question. I think part of it may just go back to that idea of propaganda. I think we've been told over and again how that it's just a prison sentence, and that it's something that is a waste of your valuable time. There was an article in one of these advice columns, Ask Maryland. I don't have any idea who this is. It was, I think, in the Parade magazine. Somebody gave it to me to show me. Anyway, the question was about whether this woman recommended homeschooling. Now, whether you like or don't like homeschooling is really a separate issue to me. What I found interesting, she doesn't, but what I found interesting was why she opposed it. She said, quote, "If homeschooling were institutionalized, half of the youthful potential of Americans would go unfulfilled. Say that a bright young parent sacrifices a rewarding career to stay home and teach the children. And then one parent from each married couple would be doing that. They would also sacrifice their potential. Maybe," she goes on to say, "homeschoolers can justify this loss." I had to read that a couple of times before I really got the point. She's saying, if you do this, you're going to be wasting your time teaching your children when you could do something important. She really believes that. We don't believe that, sure. Got a friend of mine that's a school teacher in North Alabama. And she sent me a copy of their, I don't know what you'd say, I guess it might be the teacher's union advisor, teachers, employees, public and state, police and judicial. I don't know what this is, but some magazines work related. And I have an article in it that she wanted me to look at. And the article is entitled "Baby or the Middle School." And the point of the article is that
We're just doing this wrong. There's so many times a woman, for example, she will want to stay home with her child when they're little, and then she'll be out of the home when they get older. She said, no, no, that's a bad idea. She said, traditionally, many women choose not to work when their kids are infants, but children may not need their parents' that presence as much then. You can find, she says, a nurturing person to help your child play with blocks and keep them safe. And I thought, now that sounds rather demeaning to me, that you would reduce her role just to keep them out of the street. You put up a fence. There's a lot of that propaganda. We could just add to that on and on. It sometimes comes from the church. One woman slipped me a note one time. We were talking about this subject, and she said, you know what happened to me? She said, one of the members where I was attending asked me where I worked, and she said, at home. And her reply was, what, are you independently wealthy? She said, no, just content. I thought that was a good answer. But this is the spirit that you encounter, and it can shape us if we're not very careful. You talk to, you know, a group of young women, wherever you might go, our young women, our daughters, and you ask them, what do you want to do with your life? I want to be, you know, what, doctor, lawyer, engine, chief, whatever you put on the sheet. But how many do you hear say, well, you know, I may do this or do that, but what I'd like to find a young man worthy of me, and I think I'd like to make his home. That's what I'd like to do with my talents and my time and my life. Why is it that we don't hear more of that? Some of it, I think, has to do certainly with the bombardment in the other direction. Some of it, I think, just comes down to materialism. I think it just comes down to the fact that we have confused our wants and our needs. I think it goes back to a principle that all of us have read over and over again. Godliness with contentment is great gain. We brought nothing into this world. It is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us therewith be content. But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and many foolish and hurtful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition. The love of money is the root of all evil, which while some have coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. I have no doubt this is where we as men come in sometimes. I've known situations where the woman had no real desire to leave the work that she's doing, but the man says, why don't you get out and do something useful for the family? How about that for leadership? How about that for spirituality? Why don't you do something to help the family, as if what she's doing is not helping? Why don't you get a job? If she goes out and does menial work, that's a job. If she's home taking care of his family, that's not a job that he can recognize that he can take. What's wrong with this picture? Where are my priorities in this matter? Sometimes it has to do with the poor working conditions that the woman might face. You know, when I was living in West Virginia, you'd hear about miners and the dangers in the mines or poor working conditions. I want to work in a place like that. You know, there are a lot of women who have to work in a place that I think is not very inviting. How'd you like to have a job where you never heard the word thank you? Where you never got a raise, you never got recognized, you never were considered? You wouldn't work there very long. There's some women, they can't wait to get out of the situation they're in because it is such a thankless job. That always begs the question, when's the last time you said thank you to your wife, Wesley? Boy, I need to think about that. I told this story before, but when we were getting married, we had elders at the church where I grew up,
And they both gave me good advice, I think, about trying to be a husband. But I remember particularly what Brother Buchanan said. I asked him, I said, "You've got a happy marriage for all these years. You tell me, what's the secret to being a good husband?" And he didn't miss a beat. Of all the things he could have said, the answer he gave was this. He said, "Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all." He said, "Don't let your wife forget how much you appreciate it." Good idea. But if we don't do that, then it's natural that she's going to be unhappy. Value her. Praise her. It's easy to make a joke at her excuse, but it may not be so funny to her. Give her credit. Help her in the ways that she'd help you in a minute. In your work, help her. Let her know by the things that you do that you appreciate what she does from day to day. I used to joke about how that doesn't mean run out and get her a new lawnmower, you know. But I said that one time at a place, and a guy came afterwards after the service. He said, "I bought my wife a new lawnmower." I thought, really? I remember I asked him, I said, "How'd that work?" He said, "Oh, it worked great." He said, "You just pull that thing, it cracks right up." And I said, "No, that's not what I meant." Anyway, I don't think I ever got an answer to that. But you let her know that you appreciate it. And that'll make the long hours she puts in and the work she does, that'll make it special. One other thing I'll mention, and I'm going to quit. You know why some have rejected this path and have chosen another direction? I think sometimes it just comes down to what I might call simply a lack of faith. This is an article that I found in the Birmingham paper a few years ago. It is an AP story out of Little Rock, Arkansas, that they reprinted. And I'm reading their headline. The headline reads, "Church Stops Daycare to Keep Moms at Home." And just a couple of sentences. The story begins, "A Baptist church board said it shut down its daycare center to get mothers to stay at home because working mothers, quote, neglect their children, damage their marriages, and set a bad example," end quote. Well, you can imagine how that flew like a lead balloon. And so it goes on to describe the reaction. And of course, it wasn't happy. Folks were upset about that. One person they quoted said, listen to what they said. They said, "This is not happy days, and we're not living in the 1950s. Remember the old TV show, Happy Days? "This is not happy days. We're not living in the 50s. What were they saying? They said, "Man, you need to wake up. This is the 21st century. And you're living by a code that's long dead. It's a whole new world now. New. Everything new." Really? Is it really? Is the Bible outdated? Are the principles here out of step and irrelevant? I put on the chart there 1 Peter chapter 3. We were referring to that passage earlier. We didn't read down in the following verses from verse 1. But he goes on to describe the character that he's calling women to have. This chaste conversation coupled with fear, the outward adorning not to be emphasized, but rather the hidden man of the heart, the adornment of a meek and quiet spirit. After this manner, verse 5, "In the old time, holy women who trusted in God adorned themselves." And then he says in verse 6, "Even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughter you are." And here we read that, it occurs to us that people think the Bible is outdated. We live just about as far removed from the New Testament time, Peter's time, as Peter did from Sarah's time. But he recognized this fact, that Sarah was still an example.
even all those years later, because godliness does not go out of style, and the Bible does not become, is not relative to any time, it is relevant to all time. And it really is just a matter of whether we believe it or not. Again, I say, if we are so busy aping and chasing after the world and its standards, we're going to suffer the same consequences and we're not going to be able to help anybody. So we'll be different. And we'll make sacrifices and be glad of it because it's worth it. And if it, whatever it costs us, to follow the plan that God has for us, it is well.
I appreciate the kind way that you've listened tonight. And just by the way, I want you to know that I certainly am not above listening myself. And if you want to straighten me out, I'd be glad, you know, to be chastened in that regard. I certainly will be as kind in listening as you have been to me. But I want to emphasize this point again. Not one thing I've said tonight has had any intention of being hurtful to anybody. It is rather because I love my brethren to remind us not to compromise what's important, to chase after things that are temporal. To not allow the world to invade our thinking and to sway us into making changes that are not bringing us closer to the will of God. And I appreciate your attention. If you're here tonight and it's your desire tonight to become a servant of Jesus, to allow His Word and His will to lead and take captive every thought, every desire, every action, I promise you this, you won't be sorry. He won't lead us wrong. If you're here as one who, as a child of God, is strayed from the path that the Lord has outlined for us, make that right with Him. And let us assist you. Even right now, please, while we stand and while we sing, won't you come?